Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Yeah, another week. And we had Cohen, and we had Little Rocket Man, and we had just all sorts of stuff. You know, I think it's going to be an ever-increasing drumbeat now, all the way to 2020. And I have a bunch to go over with you. It's going to be kind of machine gun fire, which is kind of apropos since the House is busy passing all sorts of weird gun laws, like I forewarned you they would be. But it's going to be a rat-a-tat-tat of information this morning. And unfortunately, I am not going to have time to get into the three big shows I've promised you for the last 2 or 3 weeks, which is Muslim infiltration in the United States government, civilizational jihad, education. There's just too much going on which needs to be covered now. And, you know, I'm not going to bring you, I never do, the same news, the same glittering objects, blah, 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 that everybody else brings you in media. That's just not what I do. But I have a bunch of dots for you tonight and a bunch of things for you to think about. And they all kind of tie in, you know, more and more. For those of you who did not listen to the four shows of 4 or 5 weeks ago, and there's four shows, they're coming for your everything, parts 1, 2, 3, and 4. I really urge you to listen to them. Take your time. Takes you a month or two. That's fine. They've done some great things with the website. They've done some great things with the apps. Much easier to get on and off the different shows. And I would love some feedback on that, by the way. But I'm going to have a little story for you, another historical story, which I think you'll really like, this morning. And, we're going to touch on education just a little bit, because you probably didn't know that China has infiltrated our education system. I mean, it's bad enough we have the left in control of it, but now we have China in it too. Wait to hear about this. And there's been a few more dots this week, kind of disturbing, which ties in with my third show of They're Coming For Your Everything, the Final Solution show. I mean, what the left really has planned as a final solution for conservatives and all those people who, A, don't think like they do, B, like American values, faith, family, and the Constitution, C, are for individual rights rather than the collective rights, and D, who are not part of their constituency of victims, that they have created a amorphous voting block of. And I'll probably start with that this morning, kind of get that out of the way. We're going to talk a little bit about the summit in Vietnam. Not what happened. You've heard all that. You know what's going on. But there's something more important about that summit, and there's something more important about the Cohen hearings. And we're, other than a couple little dribs and drabs, we're not going to talk about the Cohen hearings either, except as it relates to the big picture. You know, once again, my job is to give you the dots and then look at them with you from the stratosphere and see what kind of shape they form. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing this morning. And these are some things you probably haven't thought about. And we're going to be talking about some glaring juxtapositions in the positions of the alt-left, where they say they're for one thing, but they do something else. Or they say they're for one thing, but then they exhort and push a policy which has the opposite effect. And some of these you haven't thought about, but you're going to nod your head at them. I mean, it's like slap you in the face type of logic. And we're going to talk about We're going to talk about some international things because those have, I mean, they're like totally overshadowed by all the glittering objects the press has been chasing this last week. The North Korea thing, which is a big deal. The Cohen hearings, which were, you know, I mean, just a joke. And then the racial blow up at the Cohen hearings between Meadows and that absolute nasty wench Tlaib. And then Cummings got in the middle of it, et cetera. I don't know if you've heard about it or not. I'm not going to spend any time on it. But those are the glittering objects that the press has been chasing. And we ain't going to go there. But we are going to go into the international because there's some really big things happening internationally right now that you need to know about because they could very well affect your health, safety, and welfare, the United States economy, and the security of you and your family. And the fact that the press is not talking about them is just, well, the press, the media is malpractice. That's what it is anymore. And I say that as somebody who was trained in journalism, right? Technical journalism and forestry. My, what a combination. So we have lots to cover. And we're also going to be covering, by the way, some of the things that are going on in Europe, which can also affect the United States economy and United States security. One of the things which is going on, because of all the nonsense with the 2 years of this complete hoax, trumped up Hillary Clinton nonsense of the Russian collusion, Russia, 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 you know, everybody's lost sight of what Russia and China are really doing, which is actually far more dangerous to the United States, short and long term, than any of this Russia collusion hocus pocus. And we're going to go over a little bit of that this morning, too. So without further ado, let's get this show on the road. Oh, yeah. And I'm also going to bring you up to speed just once again. I mean, I'm pounding on this for you folks. I hope you're listening on this real estate stuff that's coming. I'm going to bring you up to speed on some more stats from the real estate markets very briefly, but I think you'll get the message. If any of you are thinking of selling your home, do not be sitting on your butts. You will regret it. You will regret it. Okay, here we go. So this is transport yourself, getting your little time transporter. And this is a little piece of history I really love because it goes back to the Western United States and the Second Amendment and the whole nine yards. So in 1836, the United States of America granted a patent. And it's a famous, famous patent on a famous, famous device. And it became really the prototypical American weapon. And the story of its invention and the story of its success is kind of a prototypical American story. The two just dovetail perfectly. The patent was awarded to a guy by the name of Samuel Colt, C-O-L-T, for his, quote, single-barrel pistol with a six-chamber revolving breech, unquote. You know, the six-shooter, folks, the six-shooter. So what most people don't know is that there have been a number of patents granted for revolver-type weapons earlier. In fact, one for a 12-shooter, believe it or not, 12 bullets in the cylinder. Colt was only 22 when he got this patent. And this gun particularly, because it was kind of a combination of firepower, rapid firing, and lightweight, was particularly good on horseback, which of course made it particularly good for the military, cavalry, and for the West. And in 1846, well, let me back up a little bit. So Colt found some investors. And he opened a company called the Patent Arms Company in Paterson, New Jersey, of all places. Gee, I guess, I don't think you, oh God, I hate to say this. I don't think you could be opening that that firearms factory in New Jersey anymore, could you? No, blue, blue, blue New Jersey. And that's not a Western hymn. The sales sucked. I mean, he really didn't do well. And the factory actually closed. The factory that made the six-shooter closed in 1842, and Colt was like hovering on the edge of bankruptcy for several years. Then came along 1846. The United States went to war with Mexico. You know, the Texas War. The Texans loved the six-shooters. And they suggested to the American Secretary of War that they wanted lots of them. So guess what? The United States government approached Mr. Colt. You'll love this. Such an American story. And said, we need 10,000 of your weapons. Now, listen, Colt had only sold about 1,500 over about a six-year period. So when they came to him and said, we want 10,000 of your revolvers, and by the way, we'll have additional orders for that much or more shortly. And his factory, remember, his factory was closed down. The government didn't know this. He had several problems, right? He had no factory. And he didn't have a six-shooter left to his name. He had sold every six-shooter that he possessed, that he had manufactured. I mean, every single one to try and pay off his debts. And, of course, that hadn't worked. So he actually advertised. This is no kidding, folks. He actually advertised in newspapers around the country for samples of his own pistol. He had to advertise to get one of his own pistols that he had invented and manufactured. But you know what? All the gun owners recognized the ad. The word spread really quickly, and they thought that the revolver was now a collector's item. So guess what? Nobody would give him or sell him one of his own six-shooters. So Colt hired a gunsmith. And he, fortunately, Colt still had his like original diagrams from the manufacturing process. And he enlisted the help of a Texas Ranger by the name of Sam Walker. I'm sure many of you who are familiar with Western history, probably the most famous of the Texas Rangers, to help him kind of streamline the design and the heft and all that kind of good stuff, the barrel length. And they finally came up with a prototype. And the government is now chomping at the bit, like, we're at war, we need the weapons. So he had to find somebody who was familiar with, at that time, modern manufacturing processes, right? The assembly line type of manufacturing. And, of course, that was in its infancy in the 1850s. It was just, or the 1840s, it was just, I mean, at its infancy. Singer sewing machine was one of the very first. Those of you who read my books know I talk about that. So it's trying to find somebody who knew, who grasped the concept, and who was able, and who had the skills and engineering and the other 1840s expertise to put together kind of an assembly line for this relatively previously unproduced weapon was a daunting task. And you know who he found? The son of Eli Whitney. The gentleman who had come up with the cotton gin, the mass production of cotton fiber. Within a decade, the Colt 44 was the gun that is known as the gun that was winning the West. And of course, he fulfilled all his orders and sold hundreds of thousands of those firearms. And Colt is today a very successful firearms manufacturer of pistols and other weapons. Anyway, I love that story. I mean, you know, the moxie of it all, right? American moxie. Even though, I suppose, if Barack Obama had been president, Barry would have said, you didn't build that. I'm sorry, I had to get that in. So let's talk about some of the other things that we have to talk about this morning. So I don't know if any of you saw that video of Dianne Feinstein kind of lecturing these kids that had come to her office in San Francisco, and another bunch of kids with this really weird teacher. I mean, she was so weird. Oh, if you don't do something in 10 years, you're looking at the faces of the children that are going to be affected, that are going to die. Oh, I mean, it, like, make me gag. But anyway, Feinstein was not all too friendly with them. In fact, it was one of the few times I've liked Feinstein. And In response, our friend, the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, Ocasio-Cortez, had a bunch of tweets, and it's very telling what those tweets were. It's going to tie in with shall we say, my reminders of the final solution part of the show. One of her tweets was, until you come up with your own ambitious plan, we're in charge. And you are merely shouting from the seats in the rear. I want you to think about that for a moment. This is a babe who got a total of 19,000, give or take, votes in her congressional election and won the election by 3,000 votes in a district of 780,000 people in which less than 30,000 voted. But we're in charge. And she followed that up with a tweet a few days later, which really struck me, which was kind of along the same lines. You know, if you don't have a plan, then I'm the boss. I think that is a real insight into the way the minds of the alt-left think, folks. You'll notice that there is a video on the website, and I believe it's under alt-left. It might even be posted right under the audio part on the website. And it's Bill Mayer. You really, really, really need to watch that video. It's not long, a couple minutes. But in it, he describes how the left and the urban people are so sophisticated and know so much and are so smart and are so elite. And the rest of us are just bums. And the reason that we're so angry is that we want what they have. And you should see the pictures that flash up with this video. You know, pictures of ice cream and pictures of wine glasses. And it really gives you an insight into what the alt-left believes life is all about. What's important to them. And it absolutely, I mean, I will tell you that watching that video, normally I laugh at that kind of stuff. This video pissed me off. I think it'll do the same for you. At one point he goes, we have Chef Wolfgang Putz. They have Chef Boyardee. Does that kind of give you an idea? Watch that video. Because it tells you what the alt-left thinks of us. We already know what the alt-left thinks of newborn babies. They exist only at the whim of someone else. They have no rights. We know that Vermont removed newborn babies, I talked about it last week, from the list of legal persons in the state of Vermont. That's right. If you're a fully formed baby in the birth canal or right after birth, you're not a person in Vermont. You have no legal protection. So take those two dots, three dots actually. Cortez, we're the boss, we're in charge. Bill Mayer, we like Wolfgang Putz, they like Chef Boyardee. And infanticide, the killing of the most innocent among us. Forget the excuses, and I've said this before, of, oh, woman's reproductive health and, you know, protection of the woman. This is nonsense. We're talking about a baby that is out of the womb, out of the birth canal, and the cord has been cut, and it's a living, breathing human being on its own. And then, folks, think about some of the stuff that they're now talking about. The reparations, I've talked about that. I'm not going to belabor it. Think about the use of race and religion and creed and culture is being used in an ever-increasing and more rapid drumbeat. And if you look at what, like, Elizabeth Warren has going with her taxation and her wealth taxes, and you look at this reparations thing, which, by the way, Barack Obama has now come out for. You know, he went over to South Africa to pat them all on the back for the reparations, the taking without due process of all lands and assets of anybody who's not black. And by the way, anybody, if you're Asian, sorry, we take your farm. You're white, sorry, we take your farm. You're Mexican, you're brown, you're not black, we take your farm. And I did a whole show on that, put reparations in the search bar. You can listen to it in detail, know the history of it. These folks absolutely, positively, without a doubt, have no regard for us, can't stand us. In fact, they despise us. Just like, in some twisted way, they despise babies, fetuses. You know, the baby is an impediment to a woman's right to choose, even when the baby is living on its own. And we are an impediment to their right to, quote, be the boss, to be in control, to run the show, so that they can bring us to Wolfgang Putz and save us from Chef Boyardee. It's really quite frightening. And, you know, I've gotten a number of emails in the past 3 weeks since I did those four shows, parts 1 through 4. They're coming for your everything. And I've gotten emails, oh, you know, you're kind of overblowing it, you're overplaying it, you're paranoid, conspiracy theory, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what, folks? When somebody tells you what they're going to do to you, and you laugh it off, that's the same as ignoring Hitler's Mein Kampf, Karl Marx's The Manifesto, Barack Obama's Dreams from My Father. These people are serious. And education is where it all got started. And I want you to think about something. Millennials now outnumber baby boomers. Sheer numbers. And 36% of millennials think socialism's cool. There's another pretty large percentage that, you know, they're not too sure about capitalism. Nah, they're not too sure about socialism because, you know, in their education system, they didn't get taught about either. But that's something for another show. Now, if you don't think, remember that millennials will be running this country. I mean, AOC, right, the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, is a millennial. Omar, the rabid, anti-American, pro-Sharia, consorts with terrorists, raises money for CARE and Hamas, bitter anti-Semite, along with her buddy, new Congressman Tlaib, are millennials. And if you don't think that these people wouldn't hurt you, and I don't mean just take your money and take your land and take your freedoms and take your security. If you don't think they wouldn't hurt you, if they had the chance and they had the power, let me tell you something really, really, really interesting. Last week, there was a survey, and actually, folks went out on the UCLA campus. Granted, all the universities are like friggin' off the deep end on the left. UCLA even more so. But these surveyors went out and they had a petition. And the petition, which was two or three paragraphs, basically, and it was done by a gal by the name of Caitlin Bennett and Genitalia. That's Jenna Talia, not Genitalia, okay? No play on words there. J-E-N-N-A-T-A-L-I-A. The petition was the voice support, listen to this now, to throw conservatives into involuntary re-education and concentration camps. I want you to think about this. This is an American campus, American students in the United States of America. I want you to know that more than 92% of the students approached were not only okay with signing it, they were eager to sign it. Some of them, described by these gals who were working undercover, ecstatic to sign it. In fact, UCLA's student government heard about it and contacted these two researchers who were running around getting all sorts of signatures on this petition and encouraged some changes in the language. Add the word diversity and sensitivity training in terms of the purposes of these concentration camps, which they named, renamed re-education camps, so that it would be, quote, to hide their real intentions so that the administration of the United States would approve it. All right, I want you to think about that. All of you doubting Thomases who've listened to my, and well, listened to me for the last 3 or 4 weeks as I brought more and more of these dots out because they're coming out like every day, but listen to my third show, They're Coming For You Everything Part 3, where I lay out the case for what the alt-left really believes the final solution to all us Chef Boyardee types should be, and what they plan if they ever get power. And if this doesn't convince you that they, if you take all these dots, the killing of babies, I mean, I want you to think about that. And then I had to pause there because I had to think about it. I mean, it just boggles the mind. You know, the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, she came out with a whole another thing this week. I mean, she's like, she's a fountain of, I don't know what, fountain of gag me. And that was, you know, because of the fragility of the climate, and climate change, and the end of the world, and blah, 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 and environmental concerns, and we should stop having children. Personally speaking, in her case, I think that would be a good thing. But I want you to think about an alt-left mind that will kill babies, tells you to stop having children, and whose, should we say, meat of constituents thinks that throwing us Chef Boyardee types in concentration camps is a really good thing. The older ones think taking everything we have is a really good thing. I want you to think about an alt-left that says, on one hand, we should stop having children and who supports killing babies. And on the other hand, says, any immigrant that wants to come to the United States should come to the United States. Now, how do you square those two things, folks? If you're worried about the population of the United States and the environment of the United States and the CO2 emissions, blah, 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 which every human being creates in one way, shape, or form, and you want to stop all our American population growth, but you want to open the borders to millions, tens of millions of illegal immigrants, what does that tell you about the mindset or lack of mindset? I mean, that's just one of the paradoxes I'm going to bring to your attention this morning. We had, the left, what the left likes to do, they like to decapitate at the top. In other words, cut everything that's over a certain height down so that everything can be the same height, except, of course, the ruling class of the left. They're way above the rest of the grass. There is, in the Baltimore schools, because this education thing ties into this so, I mean, this UCLA petition deal. This is a product of left-wing professors and left-wing grade schools, middle schools, and high schools. In Baltimore, 13 Baltimore schools did not have one child, not one child, that passed the state math test. I want you to think about that for a moment. Not one kid in 13 schools passed the state math. 40% of the schools which are predominantly black in the United States are substandard. Now, here is an alt-left that talks about the lack of opportunity, that we need to employ reparations to even the playing field. We need to redistribute. We need Medicare for All, which is really redistribution, as was admitted under the much tamer Obamacare. Yet the same left that decries this lack of opportunity for minorities, for their constituency of victims, the same left refuses to vote for school vouchers so these kids can get into good schools. And the same left are ardent supporters of the teachers' unions, which do more than anything else to stifle growth in education, to stifle education that really teaches you something. Think about that paradox. You know, instead of school choice, they support unions that are against school choice. Instead of supporting a curriculum which would lift these poor people who need reparations because things are uneven out of poverty and giving them the tools to work with. You know the old saying, right? Don't give me a fish. Give me a fishing rod and teach me how to fish. Instead, they just want to make it all free. You know, at the same time that the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx and her, who, by the way, who's not from the Bronx, she's that's all yet another lie. At the same time that they're starting to run around talking about how Americans should stop having children, the country of Hungary, who, by the way, has a wall that really works, they're the only country in Europe that hasn't been overrun by hordes of Muslim and other immigrants from, you know, the wars of Barack Obama, the policies of Barack Obama in the Mideast. Hungary, which has Europe's only functioning wall, has just started a whole program which encourages children in Hungary. The government is giving people all sorts of bennies if they have kids, and all sorts of educational opportunities, not free education, but educational opportunities. Tax and income breaks for couples that have kids. So here is a country who is jealously guarding its cultural heritage and protecting it, who is promoting an increase in birth rate, while at the same time here in the United States, we have the alt-left beginning to beat the drums for zero or negative birth rate. Let me give you an example of what happens with zero or negative birth rate, shall we? Let's go to China, if we shall. Let me see. I got so much stuff spread out over here. It's driving me crazy. All right. So in China, folks, there is... Okay, where are we at here? China. You'll love this. So, you know, for about a 20-year period, China basically said you can't have any girl children, and you can only have one child. Well, China is now reaping the detriments of that. One of the reasons the Chinese economy is contracting, never mind the tariffs and everything else that's going on, is that their population demographically is hitting the wall. because of these low birth, controlled birth policies of literally 20, 30 years ago. Aging Chinese now far outnumber young Chinese. In China, for every worker, there is now at least four, and some people estimate five, folks who have quote-unquote retired, in American parlance, who have ceased to be productive members of society in communist China parlance. You have one worker supporting four or five elderly Chinese now. That tends to put pressure on production and economic growth. In addition, to take care of these older people, China is going to have to expend trillions of dollars on, shall we say, senior infrastructure and senior support. And they're also running into many psychological problems in these seniors. In fact, China recently adopted a law where if you have an aging parent in a nursing home, by law, by Chinese law, you must visit them once a week. That's to ease the cost of psychological treatment on the state. So there we have a country, the second largest economy in the world, who tried this low birth rate experiment, shall we say, and it's been a dismal failure. And on the other hand, we have a country, Hungary, which is promoting a higher birth rate amongst its citizens, which is a colossal success. Gee, you think that's a coincidence? In fact, do you think that bug-eyed babe from the Bronx's ideas are meant to help or hurt the United States? Gee, let's think about it for just a moment, shall we? And since we're talking about kids and we're talking about education, let's talk about something very dangerous that nobody is covering. In addition to the alt-left seizure of our educational system, turning out, I don't want to say intellectual products, shall we say products of mental void, like the college students who signed petitions literally to send their parents to concentration camps at UCLA, I was just talking about. I mean, think about that. They signed petitions to send their parents to concentration camps. Wow. I mean, you can't tell me that every single parent of every single kid who signed that petition at UCLA is a liberal. I don't think so. Now there's been a study which just came out of a Senate subcommittee. It's been top secret, but it was just released. While everybody's running around on Russian collusion hoaxes, paid for by Hillary, done by Fusion GPS, and promoted by treasonous Comey and crew, the Chinese government, folks, you know, China, our arch enemy, and trust me, our arch enemy, has infiltrated almost every sector of the U.S. education system while we've been asleep at the switch. If you don't think, folks, as a sidelight, that Russia and China are, if you don't think they're absolutely thrilled at the distraction to the detriment of the United States and the American people of this alt-left Democratic Communist Party nonsense, these hearings, and Cohen, and the Russian crap, and all this nonsense, if you don't think they're thrilled with that, you're a fool. You know, one of the things that the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx and her cabal, Pelosi and Tlaib and Omar and Swalwell and Shifty Shift, you know, the whole disgusting cabal. One of the things that they really ought to do if they're going to do it for free, if they continue with these policies, they'll give you free Chinese lessons. Because that's what we'll be speaking in 30 years. You don't think for one minute that Russia or China, and particularly China, if given the opportunity, wouldn't flex its muscle to the detriment of the United States. By muscle, I mean military muscle. You don't think for one second they'd hold back, do you? You don't think for one second that our adversaries on the planet wouldn't take advantage of our unilateral move away from fossil fuels, huge decrease in the defense budget, huge increase in the entitlement state, and intentional division within our country to do what they needed to do to get our resources, to control our economy? I mean, let's not underestimate just how nasty enemy countries can be. That would be akin to Neville Chamberlain. That would be akin to Neville Chamberlain thinking that Hitler was not going to invade Poland in September of 1939. And for those of you who are World War II buffs, you know that was what started the whole shooting match. No pun intended. And along the ways, while we're distracted by collusion that didn't exist, Russia and China have been very busy subverting all sorts of American culture and life. I'm going to tell you a little bit of it this morning. There's another huge Senate investigation going on to the links between Communist China and Russia and the environmental groups, which are promoting the New Green Deal and all sorts of other environmental hocus pocus. I mean, Russia has nothing to sell but oil. The less oil America produces, folks, the more money, the more oil Russia can sell, and the higher the price they get per barrel, period. It's just basic math. And China, of course, knows that the less fossil fuels that America has, the less we'll produce, and the less economic competition China has. In their stated quest to be the world's number one economy. So both those outfits have infiltrated and are funding environmental groups, I'm going to give you their names, that are behind all this nonsense that we're hearing about. But the Chinese particularly, while we've been asleep at the switch, while our elected representatives play their treasonous, traitorous, self-indulgent, self-enriching, gag me. Let me read this to you. The Chinese government is infiltrating nearly every sector of the U.S. education system via a package of programs and monetary schemes that seek to indoctrinate American children and bring the communist government's propaganda into the classroom. By the way, this report was done by the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. They have found that China has spent $200 million on educational entities which China calls the Confucius Institutes. And these programs are like in schools, U.S. schools across the country. They're really ingrained in a bunch of colleges, and now they're beginning to get ingrained in middle schools and high schools. Isn't that nice? The Senate committee found that these institutes constitute a threat to the United States, and China is, quote, attempting to change the impression in the United States and around the world that China is an economic and security threat. Just so you know, there's more than 100 Confucius entities now operating in our educational system. Isn't that great? And China has plans to open another 200. Where's Elijah Cummings on this nonsense? China has opened over 100 additional, I'm quoting, Confucius Institutes in the United States for the last 15 years. And the Department of Education has remained silent. Quote, the Chinese government also funds and provides language instructors for Confucius classrooms, which offer classes for kindergarten through 12th grade students. Confucius classrooms are currently in 519, listen to this, folks, 519 elementary, middle, and high schools in the United States. Continued expansion of this program is a priority for China. Huh. We could get another quote. As China has expanded Confucius Institutes here in the U.S., it has systematically shut down key U.S. State Department public diplomacy efforts on Chinese college campuses. Schools in the United States from kindergarten to college have provided a level of access to the Chinese government that the Chinese government has refused to provide to the United States. Confucius Institutes exist as part of China's broader long-term strategy. Through Confucius Institutes, the Chinese government is attempting to change the impression in the United States and around the world that China is an economic and security threat. Then the teachers that China has put in there are called, they're from the Chinese education system in communist China, which is called the Hanban, H-A-N-B-A-N. So that you know. And the Senate subcommittee actually got its hands on some of the contracts between communist China and its Hanban teachers in these Confucius Institutes that are spreading like cancers through our education system. And gee, you wonder why people don't mind socialism, why they don't understand communism. I mean, wow. While school officials, this is a quote, while school officials have the opportunity to interview Hanban candidates for these positions, there is little to no transparency into how the Chinese government selects the individuals that schools must choose from. Nor did U.S. school officials interviewed by the subcommittee know if candidates would meet the school's hiring standards. Huh. Confucius Institutes are funded, controlled, and mostly staffed by Hanban to present Chinese government-approved programming to students at U.S. schools. Hanban approves each Confucius Institute's annual budget and has veto authority over events and speakers. Well, anyway, I think you get the idea. We have, it's a huge problem that has just come to light. To be honest with you, I think we all know that hostile foreign actors that believe in totalitarian, socialistic, and communist governments have been active on college campuses and in the United States for a long time. I mean, we've caught and executed spies, and, you know, just like we have people over in their countries doing the opposite. But I had no idea, folks, that the infiltration was so manifest in our educational system. This article was a real eye-opener for me, and I hope it is for you too. And those of you who are parents, you need to find out about this in your schools, and you need to shut it down. I mean, this is the same as in certain areas of the country, Sharia classes. I mean, this stuff needs to be shut down. It is anti-American. It is anti-constitutional. It is sedition, to put it mildly. Let's talk about the green groups. I mean, we're kind of on a roll here with the infiltration of left-wing, alt-left. Number one, the dots which point to the final solution, which they would really like to impose on us. And number two, the infiltration of not only alt-left groups, and Muslim extremist groups, and now we find out, to our horror, communist Chinese groups in our education systems. Now we find in yet another report that's come out, that came out February 20th, that the green groups, the environmental groups, have been infiltrated and are being funded by Russia and China. This is why we're wasting our time on the Russian collusion Trump nonsense. Really? No kidding. FARA, that's F-A-R-A. In fact, you actually heard about it this week because Cohen got a criminal referral from the Republicans on the committee for not following the rules of FARA, which is the Foreign Agents Registration Act. It appears, and this might be one good thing that came from the Mueller nonsense that's going on. Quote, if the Mueller probe has any real benefit, it is that it's opened the door for the Justice Department to employ FARA as a basis to investigate green groups that are undermining our country and aiding and being aided by socialist and communist regimes. That's Mark Fitzgibbons, very famous, kind of has his head screwed on right, environmental lawyer. The Foreign Registrations Act, folks, predates World War II, just so you know. It goes way back. And basically it says that anybody who acts as an agent or on behalf of any foreign principles, quote, in a political or quasi-political capacity, unquote, they have to disclose that relationship periodically, and they got to furnish to the United States government their activities, receipts, disbursements, all that stuff. Unfortunately, FARA, except where Mueller has used it to, you know, hammer some of Trump's team, having nothing to do with Trump, unfortunately, FARA has not been enforced too much. And what this Senate committee has found, and by the way, this was prompted by Judicial Watch. Tom Fitton, the president of, you know, I tell you all the time how Judicial Watch is just rocks, and support them. By all means, support them. In fact, I think if you go to politics, you'll see, or one of the sections where we have a bunch of articles this week. Make sure you read the immigration articles, the women articles, and yes, the family safety articles. And of course, the treason articles. Well, read them all. Be informed. This is Tom Fitton. We already know the law has been selectively enforced. Violations of FARA have typically been handled administratively. If you didn't file paperwork, you were told to file it. But the Mueller special counsel operation, desperate for prosecutions, started criminally prosecuting FARA regulations where they had never been criminally prosecuted before. You know, Paul Manafort, for instance, folks, Richard Gates, in an indirect way, although he was caught for lying, but it came from a problem with FARA, in the National Security Advisor, General Flynn. And during the exchange, Gosar, he is a Republican from Arizona, a Republican congressman. In this hearing, Gosar was questioning Fitton. It was pretty interesting. And he wanted to know if environmental advocacy groups would be taking orders or were taking orders from a foreign government or were beholden to a foreign government financially. And this included, Fitton said yes, by the way. And they're after all sorts of documents right now from these groups. I'm going to give you their names here in a moment. But Fitton basically said environmental advocacy, blah, 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 groups that oppose natural gas development, hydraulic fracturing, you know, fracking, have received, quote, millions of dollars in grant money that congressional investigators have traced back to the Russian government. Environmental groups such as the Natural Resources Defense Council have undermined the energy sector in the United States and even got fracking banned in the cash-strapped state of New York. So, by the way, Gosar sits on the House Natural Resources Committee. Let me give you another quote. The Natural Resources Defense Council, for example, has gotten cozy with the environmentally unfriendly Chinese government while suing the United States government whenever it can. This environmental group's lawsuits against the Navy and its weapon developments program could work to the strategic advantage of China's communist government. Gee, you think? You bet. That organization, quote, has sued the U.S. Navy multiple times to stop or drastically limit naval training exercises in the Pacific. You know, remember the South China Sea, folks, Pacific, all the stuff that's going on there. In the Pacific, arguing that naval sonar and anti-submarine warfare drills harm marine life. We are unaware of the NRDC, that's the National Resource Defense Council, having made any similar efforts to curtail naval exercises by the Chinese. So let's say, here's what's coming to light. The NRDC, Natural Resource Defense Council, the outfit I just told you, I gave you a few examples of what they're doing. They have $155 million in revenues and $126 million in expenses last year. $15 million of their income, folks, was from the San Francisco-based Sea Change Foundation, which, gee, gets its funding from a Bermuda-based company that gets funded by Russian President Vladimir Putin. Huh. Imagine that. But, you know, we want to know about the meeting in Trump Tower before Trump was president. Okay. We want to know about the golden shower in the GPS dossier. Yeah. You know, one of the things which came, let me step back from this environmental foreign government consortium conspiracy collusion to undermine the United States and to promote alt-left concepts and ideals at the expense of the United States and to the benefit of Russia and China. Let me step back from that a moment. This past week, the fact that Congress, the fact that Democrats are ignoring this monumental stuff, China in our education system, China and Russia funding these environmental groups, and who knows who of the alt-left. Wouldn't you like to just follow the money when it comes to Bug-Eyed Babe from the Bronx and Tlaib and all those folks? I mean, I would love to follow that money trail. It would be so interesting. Soros and Russia and China. To give you an idea of how little the Democratic Communist Party thinks of America and Americans, and particularly Americans of the Chef Boyardee class, they had this hearing for Cohen on the same day that Trump is meeting Kim, baby, from North America in Vietnam. Now, we all know that. I want you to think about something. You know, everybody is human. Trump is a tough nut. He's a tough nut. But he's a human being. I want you to think back in your life as to any time you had something really important to attend to and something of another nature. Maybe it was a business problem, or it was a problem at home, or it was a personal problem, or bad health news, or whatever it was, the death of a loved one, the attack by somebody verbally or whatever, that had occurred during or just prior to you having to take on this really important assignment that had to be done. There's not one of us listening to this radio show, and that's millions, that cannot think back to a time where we were not, even in the midst of a really important task, distracted by something entirely unrelated. Because we're humans. And if you are negotiating with somebody, and you know that your opponent in that negotiation is A, distracted, and B, has some type of problem. You know, let's say it's a financial problem. I'm not talking about Vietnam and North Korea now. I'm giving you an everyday situation. If you have an opponent in a negotiation, and you know they have a problem, and you know that that problem has distracted them and weakened them and perhaps made them want to get something done so they could go home and work on the problem, wouldn't you kind of try and push the envelope on the negotiation? Do you think that Kim baby from North Korea doesn't know exactly what's going on in the United States politically, particularly with the mainstream media jumping up? And I mean, there was more coverage of Cohen than there was of Vietnam. I mean, you only have, you know, the fate of tens of millions of people hanging in the balance. I mean, Democrats don't care about that, obviously. I mean, they've killed 1 million people in the Mideast. They couldn't care less. My point is that the reason, and I'm convinced of this, the reason that something did not get done in Vietnam is, number one, to some extent, Trump was distracted. It didn't make him less tough, but it made him, and I don't care if it was 1% or 3%, less focused. And that can be a critical difference. And number two, it emboldened Kim. He figured Trump would be less focused. Trump would want to get home. Trump, because of all this nonsense going on in the United States, would want to have something, some type of agreement to wave around and say, look, I got something done. And Kim went too far. And there is no doubt in my mind, I mean, history will have to be the judge of this, and one day we'll know. But there's no doubt in my mind that the only reason something was not signed and accomplished in Vietnam was the incredibly anti-American spectacle of Gagme Cohen testifying in Congress. Could have been done any day. Could have been done a week prior, or better yet, a week after. It could have been started on Friday when Trump was scheduled back. I mean, there are no coincidences. And the Democratic communists, if a deal never gets done, and a nuclear war or any kind of conflict breaks out with North Korea, then the millions of people, you know, they've done war games that showed 8 million people dying in 24 hours. Every single person that would die as a result of a deal not getting done would be on the hands of the Democrats, the same way the 500,000 people that have died in Syria and the 150,000 in Yemen and etc. And I might add that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama taking out Gaddafi. Let me give you a little background on Gaddafi. I'm going to get back to this environmental infiltration too in just a moment. But it's all tied in. It's all tied in. It is all the continual efforts of the left to subvert at any cost, including the cost of human life. Whether you're a baby, or you're a Korean, or you're a Syrian, or you are an American. Human life is completely secondary, particularly if you are a subhuman, like a baby or the Chef Boyardee crowd. To the left. In fact, just look at the 20th century and the 110 million people killed by the left in Russia and China and Italy and Germany and etc. Cambodia. I mean, look at Maduro down there in Venezuela, not allowing food into his own people. Really. I mean, if nothing else, he could have done his propaganda and said, look at the food I'm bringing you. Instead, he stopped it. So what we have is a slapping us in the face, folks, is a complete and utter disregard for human life, for human rights, for human freedoms, for American values, and for at least half, maybe more, of the American population. I mean, it's irrefutable. And all these things which are subverting our culture, subverting our education, in this case, subverting probably with the knowledge of the alt-left, the environmental stuff in the midst of this new Green Deal and all this nonsense, the left is doing nothing about. They're spending all their time on things which will bring them power. Everything else be damned. Achieve and maintain perpetual power. That is their number one mantra. A lot of the green activism, to get back to this, it's all tied in. A lot of the green activism, there's another outfit called the Energy Foundation. It's also based in San Francisco. Gee, big surprise. They got $64 million from the Sea Change Foundation, you know, our friend Vladimir Putin. And they are the biggest, congratulations to them, single recipients of Russian, Sea Change Foundation grants. The Energy Foundation also took part of their money and gave it to the NRDC, Natural Resource Defense Council. Tens of millions, in fact. These groups were instrumental in the Paris Accord stuff. They were instrumental in numerous countries, not just the United States, in getting these Western countries to sign on to the Paris Accord. They were instrumental in the Paris Accord basically saying the United States and France and everybody else had to immediately stop, you know, emissions and da-da-da and, you know, tone down all their fossil fuels. But China and India didn't have to do squat for 30 years. Did you know that about the Paris Accords? Yes, that's what they were. So the Western civilization would tie one hand behind its back, and the Chinese could operate with both hands. There's another outfit by the name of the World Resources Institute, who, by the way, in the Paris Peace Accord, they wrote a letter that said, quote, "We hail China's 2015 pledge for the Paris Agreement to peak greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, 2030, as a serious, incredible contribution." Everybody else was 2021 or 2022, whatever it was. There was a, what's the other outfit here? Oh, quote, this is the report from the committee. This will tell you how serious this is. Quote, DOJ should unleash what are called civil investigative demands, CIDs, on many green groups that are believed to be violating FERA. I believe CIDs are unconstitutional because they are the searches of private papers without probable cause. But perhaps when socialist green groups get the sting of these menaces, the left's erstwhile civil liberties groups will see the light about them. In the meantime, the DOJ seems to clearly have grounds to investigate green groups suspected of violating FERA. Chris Horner, he's a lawyer with the Government Accountability and Oversight outfit, which, by the way, is a public interest law firm, kind of middle of the road. He testified that he shares Fitton's concerns, quote, Fitton's concerns about how the Foreign Agents Registration Act might be selectively applied going forward. I'm still quoting. Either the special counsel's invocation of the FERA law represents remarkably selective policing of possible unregistered activity on behalf of foreign governments, depending upon one's political associations, or signals that the DOJ has decided to take this law seriously and has noticed congressional probes into other potential violations like the education stuff we just went over and this environmental stuff. By the way, the Judicial Watch has sued some of these green outfits with FOIA requests, and they're starting to get documents in. That's one of the things which this committee is continuing to investigate. And one series of emails that they got, which dates back to April 2015, includes a World Resources Institute staffer talking to State Department officials about a government, about a Chinese government entity that had approached the World Resources Institute for the purposes of, quote, opening up channels of communication with the United States government and think tanks, unquote. There's a guy by the name of Bonner Cohen. He's a senior fellow with the National Center for Public Policy Research. Pretty strong outfit. He said that he's read the emails and, quote, they show China was working to shape U.S. policy on climate change, unquote. Quote, if WRI, that's World Resource Institute, the greenies taking the Chinese money, if WRI's services on behalf of China aim to influence U.S. climate policy by diminishing American energy output do not constitute a violation of FERA, then what does? The Trump administration is already cracking down on China's stealing our intellectual property and violating our cybersecurity. Given the crucial role energy plays in our economy and national security, the Trump Justice Department needs to join the fray and investigate possible violations of FARA by WRI and any other group colluding with foreign interests against the United States. Otherwise, China, Russia, and others will continue to avail themselves of their American fifth columns. Pretty fascinating stuff, is it not? But somehow you don't see any of the alt-left commies in either the deep state. You know, I don't hear John Brennan, who was head of the FBI, talking about that. He can only talk about Trump and the dossier. I don't hear any committees now run by Democrats in the House even talking about investigating this stuff. Once again, another clear indication, folks, of how little they really care about America, Americans, particularly the Chef Boyardee crowd, constitutional values, and America's place amongst nations, shall we say. So we have some pretty dangerous stuff going on. And in addition to all this stuff, we have Russia rattling its nuclear sabers. I don't know if you know this or not. It just published a list of all the Americans' targets it would hit with its new hypersonic, quote-unquote, unstoppable nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. And if you watch the Russian press, yeah, I'm in collusion with Russia, exactly. If you watch the Russian press, or the English translation of the Russian press, you will notice that over the last month or two, there has been really ratcheted up talk of a Russian military altercation with the United States and potential first strike. I find that worrisome. And don't think that Russia, just like Kim in Vietnam, doesn't understand how distracted our government is by the Democratic Communists. In addition to that kind of worrisome beating of the drum, so to speak, by Russia, you have increased military activity by China in the South China Sea. In addition, you have, and it was barely covered. I mean, I think I saw one mention of it for 30 seconds. Like 30 seconds on TV all week. You have this shooting war that's going on between Pakistan and India over Kashmir. Kashmir is this province. They've been fighting. They've had five wars over Kashmir since 1947, to give you a little background. And some of them pretty vicious. One third of Kashmir is predominantly Muslim, which is what Pakistan is. Two thirds of Kashmir is predominantly Hindu, which is what India is. And in the last week, they've been shooting down each other's fighter planes, capturing each other's soldiers. There was an IED that killed 50 Indian soldiers. And it couldn't be more tense. These are two nuclear powers. And the same war modeling that projected 8 million deaths at least if North Korea ever let loose within the first 24 hours projects 20 million die in the first 48 hours and another several hundred million die in the months, in the weeks and months thereafter if India and Pakistan ever get into it. And, you know, you have kind of a deal, kind of like Israel versus Iran. The only resort that Pakistan has in the event of a war is nuclear weapons. Pakistan is a much smaller country with a much smaller population and a decent but much smaller army than India. I mean, Pakistan wouldn't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning a ground war with India. Very, very, very dangerous situation. Nobody's talking about it. They're talking about they're asking Cohen whether or not there's a video whether Trump has a love child. Okay, great, terrific. Thank you, Congress. At the same time, also, folks, there are some very disturbing developments in the Mideast. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but Benjamin Netanyahu has been indicted for fraud, bribery, and breach of trust. I'm not making this up. And, you know, Netanyahu is the spine of Israel. I mean, he really is the spine of Israel. And that could deal a significant blow to Israeli peace plan, to the plans for some kind of accord between Israel and the Palestinians. It could also undermine the alliance, which is remarkably developing between Israel, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, the Sunni Arab countries against Iran. And my theory is, and I bet I get it borne out, here's my theory. We can think about this. My theory, once again, connecting the dots from the stratosphere. We know Barack Obama spent United States taxpayer money illegally and had his campaign operatives over there secretly trying to undermine Netanyahu, whom he hated, in the Israeli elections before Obama got out of office. We know that. That is a fact. We know that Netanyahu is a strong proponent of the two-state solution, Palestinian state, Israeli state. We know that Netanyahu is a staunch enemy of Iran. And we know that if a peace deal was ever reached in the Mideast, it would be a huge plum, a huge feather in the cap of the Trump administration, not to mention great for the world, but, you know, the alt-left doesn't care about that. And we have the spectacle, let me give you another dot, of the framing and the hoax of the attempted frame of Donald Trump with Russian collusion via a fake dossier paid for by Hillary Clinton. So we have seen the attempt at the use of criminal means to try and get rid of a sitting president of the United States. Now, if you take all these dots, what do you think is really going on in Israel? How would you like to bet that there isn't alt-left democratic communist operatives, and I mean democratic communist operatives, including American and maybe particularly American operatives, that aren't working with left-wing Israeli groups to try and take Netanyahu down, just as they are trying to take Trump down in this country? No doubt backed by Obama, who's made all the contacts in his previous attempt to unseat Netanyahu in the elections, the Israeli elections, Soros, and other scurrilous actors. I mean, that helps Barry's buddies in Iran. Remember, Valerie Jarrett was born in Tehran, Iran. That gets rid of somebody he hates, Netanyahu. That opens the way for left-wing parties in Israel. That helps the Palestinians, whom Barry sent hundreds of millions of dollars to, that Trump has now cut off. And it makes sure that there's no big feather in the cap of Donald Trump that would get him reelected. Do you think this is all coincidence? I don't think so. Not in the least, but it's a very, very worrisome event for the Mideast in a lot of ways, and there's been almost zero reporting on it in the United States. The other place internationally that people just are not covering is what's going on in Europe. There is huge division. I mean, bitter enmity between the various factions in Britain now over Brexit. The globalists have been trying to undermine Brexit since the beginning. The Labour Party has now come out for a second Brexit vote, which is what the anti-Brexit folks wanted. In the meantime, you got the Yellow Vests, which are really kind of the Frexit, you know, the French exit push from the European Union, going crazy in France, not being covered here at all. I mean, there's like 300,000 people in the streets every weekend in France. More than 3,000 police and yellow jackets have been killed or severely hurt over the last 14 weeks. 3,000. I mean, that's a big number. There is a serious movement getting started called Dexit. Denmark getting out of the European Union. Swexit. Sweden getting out of the American Union. Fixit. Finland getting out of the European Union. And one of the most virile is in Italy. I mean, Italy, folks, is a powder keg, an anti-European Union powder keg. And the anti-European Union party has now come to power. It has a majority in Italy. And listen, Italy is the weakest economy in Europe. Its debt to GDP is now 300%. 3-to-1 debt, $3 or lira, 3 lira of GDP, I'm sorry, 3 lira of debt to 1 lira of GDP, 300%. I mean, that is scary. And as you know, there is a province in Italy that is trying to split off from Italy, never mind from the European Union. Even in Germany, I mean, Merkel's on her way out. I mean, she is really, really unpopular with the German people, as well she should be, given the fact she has, so hurt that country with her immigration policy. And that's called Dexit, by the way. Deutschland Exit. The German version of Brexit, if you will. That's the largest economy in Europe. I mean, Germany is really kind of the glue, and Merkel is kind of the chief globalist that keeps us, quote-unquote, sovereign. They're not. Keeps the sovereign countries together in the European Union. And the party that opposes or that wants Germany to get out of the European Union is now just a few seats from gaining power in Germany. So all these things are adding up to kind of a dangerous situation. By the way, I'm all for dismantling the European Union. Okay? I mean, you should have sovereign states over there that stand on their own two feet and operate under the defense umbrella of NATO. But the European Union is, you know, That is globalism of the first order. There is, and by the way, it's called Italexit, is the Italy European Union exit move. The party that's taken over in Italy, and this, each one of these anti-European Union movements, Frexit and Brexit and Dexit and all the ones I just went over with you, which you probably haven't heard about at all. I mean, this is a seething cauldron of anti-European Union, populist, freedom-loving, autonomous-wanting brew of patriotism for each individual country that's going on in Europe. And the Lega Party, and they all feed on one another. I mean, the more the Yellow Jackets riot in France, the bolder the folks in Denmark get, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's feeding on itself, which is the way these things go. And one of the prime movers and shakers, as I told you, is Italy. And the party that's come to power in Italy now, the anti-European Union party, is called the Lega Party. It has a populist leader, kind of like Trump. His name is Matteo Salvini, S-A-L-V-I-N-I. And there's parliamentary elections on March 4th, where instead of being like the key component in the parliamentary coalition, they're expected to win the majority, which would be pretty amazing. And What they have vowed to do is, as soon as they win the majority, they're going to give an ultimatum to the European Union. Then unless Brussels, that's the capital of the European Union, unless Brussels gives them everything demand they want, then Italy is out of there. Italy's out of the European Union. Keep your eyes on that, because that would have, at least temporarily, severe adverse economic impact on the United States. Severe adverse impact on the United States. By the way, I was telling you about the China one-child policy. I just found that paper. They're calling that the 421 problem. Each Chinese worker, young Chinese worker today, supports four grandparents and two parents, the 421 problem. Huh. And they're thinking about passing a law that young people must look after their parents and grandparents. They expect by the year 2050, 330 million, that's our entire population, folks, Chinese people will be over the age of 65. Pretty amazing. I'm going to wrap up the show. Hopefully this stuff's been interesting for you and it's opened your eyes to some things which nobody's covering, which are hugely important. And I might add, in some cases, absolutely disgusting, frustrating, and anger-inducing. Let me just give you folks a little bit of information. And by the way, I want to tell you that under the family, I'm going to start posting articles which have to do kind of with prepping, but it's things that you want to think about for survival type situations, which could be a hurricane, it could be a tornado, it could be a flood, it could be something else. And you'll start seeing those under the family safety section of the articles each week, in addition to the normal family safety articles that the producer has been running in the past. But there's some really good stuff, some really good pointers in the stuff that we're starting to post. Let me talk about real estate, talking about family safety and security. So I've been beating this drum now. I was the very first in media, I mean the first, to be beating the drum about the value of your house going down. For those of you who haven't listened to it or new listeners, go to the archives on ontherightsideradio.com. And it's a great search engine on there. And just type into the archive, 6 reasons the value of your home is going to decline. And that show will come up. That was almost a year ago now. I've been giving you real estate stats and economic stats here, well, for the last 2 months, almost every week. Sometimes pretty good chunk, sometimes just a mention. This is just a mention, and it's to underscore what I've been warning you about on the real estate side of things. Real estate, residential real estate, so you know, makes up 15% of the total U.S. GDP. That's down from what it was, but that's still a big chunk of GDP. The National Association of Realtors reported last week existing home sales have hit 3-year lows in December. 3-year lows. And pending home sales, that means homes that are under contract to be sold, have slowed even more. Pending sales, which by the way indicate closings a month or two down the road, fell 2.2% in December, which is a year-to-year decline, December to December, of 9.8%. That's 10%, folks. That is a chunk of decline. And by the way, that happened despite the fact that over the last 2 months, I don't know if you've noticed, interest rates have gone down because the Fed has stopped raising them and the Fed has stopped sucking money out of the system because they were very nervous about what happened to the stock market when it took its plunge there in December. So despite interest rates going down, you have these, I mean, really, really big declines in key indicators in the housing market for the United States. Another key indicator, housing starts, in other words, new homes being built by builders to be sold or pre-sold or whatever. December, that stat dropped like a rock to the lowest level in 2 years, which of course indicates builders are thinking there's going to be a lot less new homes sold. That's why they're not starting them. And housing starts, listen to this, fell 11.2% in December from the previous month. That's the slowest they've been since September 2016. That's a little bit 2.5 plus or minus years ago. month to month, that is December 2017 to December 2018, housing starts went down 10.2%. Folks, these kind of stats form a pattern. They're not isolated, and they tell a story. They're sending you a warning. Heed it. And track these other things I've brought to your attention this morning. Write your congressman and stay on top of it. I mean, this is really, really important stuff. Do not get distracted like, 90% of the population seems to be doing. Too important. I also want to tell you that I've been dealing with AMAC, the Association of Mature American, whatever, AMAC. They are the conservative answer to AARP. Now, everybody's heard of AARP. They got like 35 or 37 million members. AMAC has just under 2 million, but growing rapidly. And I want to tell you, I did a show on them before. You can type in the search bar AMAC, A-M-A-C. Terrific outfit. I can't tell you how impressed I am with their people, their service, their knowledge, their conservative standpoints, their backing of American values, unlike AARP, which is left-wing to hell. And I want to really recommend, and by the way, you can join at any age. I think you only have to be like 40 years old. They happen to say mature American adults for adults over 50, but you can join before you are 50 years old. It's $16 a year. All sorts of discounts and bennies and, you know, information sources. I can't recommend them enough. If you are not an AMAC member, become one. If assuming you're over 40 or whatever, if you are, spread the word. And if you're an AARP member, get the hell out of AARP, stop supporting the enemy, and join AMAC. And the last thing is, with the gun, I didn't get to this this morning, but with gun control bills being passed everywhere, including a nasty one in the House, last week. If you are not an NRA member, become one. Buy NRA gift memberships for your kids, grandkids, parents, whatever. Get active, folks. I mean, I'm telling you, this is, the Chef Boyardee crowd is all that stands between America and the griddle. Step up. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.